Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget your machete as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
Hi.
Just shout at
him. Yeah, you're going to almost have to shout. We're in a hotel room in Hampton, New Hampshire. All these New England states, they're all the same. We're filming. We're on day four? Or is this day five? This is day...
something.
Adam, what day is this? Yesterday was
Monday.
Day four, right?
Today's Monday.
Today's Monday. Yeah, this is day five, right? Yeah, day five of On the Trail of UFOs filming. Yesterday we started... okay, let's start at the beginning. We started in Ohio on... what day was that?
I got there Wednesday, and then we left Thursday.
Really, Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
We left for the Chestnut Ridge, and we... We were at the Chestnut Ridge from, we're at the Chestnut Ridge until Friday morning. So on Thursday, we drove to the Chestnut Ridge. We checked into our haunted farmhouse, and then we rushed to interviews. Or no, we did interviews with Butch and Sean Forker at the farmhouse. Can you guys talk about the farmhouse so I can eat my muffin?
Well, we had bets going as to whether I would stay in the room that's basically on the other side of the upstairs section by myself, because the house was extremely creepy.
But you made it.
I stayed in there. I just cried a little bit.
Just a small amount.
But it was good. The drone footage up there was good. I really enjoyed finally meeting Butch. That guy knows a lot about many, many different topics. So many that I think he could probably be in every single On the Trail of from here on out.
What do you think about the Chestnut Ridge house?
Oh, fantastic.
Totally. Great memories.
Mm. Before we go any further, I'm Seth Breedlove. I'm joined by Adam Dugan, Shannon LeGros, Alexander Petikov. Everyone say hi so they know who you are.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
The last one was Alex.
The one that sounds Russian is Alex.
Yeah.
Dasvidaniya. Just say that for me, please.
Cool.
Small Town Monsters collusion scandal. Peach. we're going... So we did a lot of running around that day, and I had warned everyone. Yeah, I should probably also say, so we're sitting in a hotel room recording this through a capsule mic that is probably going to pick up a lot of background noise. We're also all sick.
Except I'm not sick.
Alex isn't sick yet.
Not
fingers,
yet.
Fingers crossed.
No, it's going to happen, buddy.
Yeah, but everyone in the crew except Alex has the cold in some form or fashion, right? Even you.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
The one.
Whose cold is it?
It started with me. So it's kind of like...
Fault.
So he calls it the cold.
It's patient zero.
You should say my cold.
Mm-hmm. The cold.
I passed it around. I think it began with Tommy, honestly. I'm going to blame...
You're blaming it on the two-year-old.
You blamed it on your two-year-old. Wow. It's not here.
Yeah. So anyway, we're all not feeling well. But we started that first day out on the ridge. We got three interviews and a couple hundred B-roll shots in a short period of time. I did accidentally delete one of the memory cards that contained not just the interview, the B-cam for that for the other interviews, but also all of our B-roll and an A-cam interview from Florida and South Carolina. So I should probably also say this isn't just the upper East Coast. Shannon flew into Orlando over a week ago. While we were still on family vacation, we picked her up at the airport, and then we did filming up through the South on our drive back from Orlando. So we shot two interviews on that part of the trip and a bunch of B-roll. So how long have you been out this way now? Is it like 9 days? I don't remember what day you got in.
9 days.
Yeah. 9 days she's been.
9 days of Seth Breedlove.
Yeah, stuck with us. So, and she doesn't fly back till Thursday, so she's still got time. We did a lot of filming on the Chestnut Ridge, and that was a lot of fun. We wanted to go a different direction. I knew I wanted the ridge in there, but we didn't want to sort of hit all the subjects that we've covered in other STM stuff, which is difficult because we've actually covered a lot of the Chestnut Ridge stuff. So we've got at least two episodes of Case Files where we've covered the ridge. We've got Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, and then we've got On the Trail of Bigfoot. So there's been a lot of ridge in STM production, so it was kind of important not to solely focus too much on the ridge, but we wanted it in there.
Are people aware of where you stayed the last time that you were on the ridge? Should they know that you were, nearly in proximity to that other location?
Yeah, we were close to where we stayed when we filmed Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, but this was a much better location. Like, the ridge was out our back door.
Except for the axe murderer coming in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
There was someone that...
Oh, yeah. I woke up in the middle of the night because I heard the back door open and footsteps come in through the kitchen. I jumped up. It wasn't middle of the night, actually. It was like 5:30.
It was like,
And I got out of bed and I got
Adam. My name is Adam.
I got Adam.
This has been also a constant issue with Seth.
I got Adam up, and Adam and I went downstairs, and there was no one down there. No doors open.
No one living.
Everything locked. Yeah. But it was clear as day. I was wide awake. You heard the back door open. The back door had a very, noticeable squeal when it would open. You heard the screen door open, back door open and shut, and footsteps come through the kitchen right beneath us. So I freaked out, got Adam up, and there was nothing down there.
Well, to be fair, there was a man on property that I lovingly referred to as Moe's.
Yeah.
And he was underneath the cellar at one point, so underneath the first floor when we went out to get B-roll, he kind of...
appeared from under
he
our house.
He just was under
sure
the house.
Real?
Yeah, we're fairly sure.
It's Moe's. He's cool.
So that night was cool too because you and Adam and I walked up the ridge. We actually went up to the top of the hill behind the house, which is part of the ridge, kind of. and we were able to do a sky watch for a little while up there, which was super cool. We encountered nothing while we were on the ridge. We were covering. So Stan, I had talked to Stan Gordon about a good spot to do a night ops, and Stan had suggested a woman's property who lived just outside of Kecksburg. I wouldn't even call it outside of Kecksburg. Mm-hmm. She's basically in downtown Kecksburg, who had been seeing things at high altitudes in the skies over her house. And Stan insisted they were not airplanes because this woman knew airplanes from everything else. When we got there, and they were all airplanes.
Every single one of them.
Everything was an airplane. And she was kind of pointing toward what were clearly airplanes with landing lights and everything.
Yeah, it was to the point where, and she meant well, and it was just complete misidentification. It was to the point where we didn't even have to get out a flight radar app.
Mm-hmm.
You could just see with the naked eye that there's blinking lights, and it was a very normal occurrence going on each and every time.
Mm-hmm. So... sorry, I'm also eating breakfast while we're sitting.
As the muffin slides down your throat.
We were out there, saw nothing, and then we woke up the next day, which was Friday, and we went immediately driving toward New York City. We had interviews scheduled with Peter Robbins and... Ryan Sprague, but due like the None of us know anything about New York City.
Well, it didn't help that for the first half of the day, I was telling Ryan that we were going to be 3.5 hours away from him.
From New York City.
Yeah, we were maybe 45 minutes tops.
It was touch and go. For a short period of time, it looked like we weren't even going to interview Ryan. But we did lose the Peter Robbins interview, but we managed to maintain Ryan's interview. Ryan met us at our tiny apartment in Union City. Tiny apartment, but really nice. Honestly, it might have been one of my favorite that I've stayed at.
Ryan said it was spacious, yeah.
For a New York, New Jersey apartment, that was a good-sized apartment, yeah.
Yeah, I liked the apartment. It was right across the river from Manhattan, and we took a... Or Times Square, and we took a... We took a Uber that night. Ryan came in and we did an interview with him that I thought was great. It was probably one of my favorite SDM interviews we've done. Just because it was so relaxed. And I don't know why that... I don't know if it was the way we were all sitting at the table with the cameras. Like, I just was... I felt much more relaxed than usually.
He's a great talker, too. Like, yeah. I mean, he just is easy
to
talk.
I mean, that's
to.
The other thing is kind of like talking to someone you already know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So it was super relaxed. We had a lot of fun with that. And then we all went into Times Square. And we originally thought we were only going to have Ryan for like an hour or so.
Yeah.
Like, but he stayed with us. He took an Uber with us into the city. We were in the city in 25 minutes.
How many accidents did we almost get into?
We narrowly averted probably 137 accidents. Yeah.
In the first seven minutes we were in there.
Yeah. And got right into Times Square, got out of the car, and I started filming B-roll of Shannon and Ryan walking around. But we basically just walked around, and he showed us the city a little bit. And then we all went to dinner, including Ryan. Yeah. We walked many blocks to find like a pizza place that ended up being amazing. And we had this... as authentic an Italian older woman as you can get.
She was yelling at the guests to sit down.
She was yelling at people.
She's like, if you want your food, you need to hurry up and order now.
Yeah, it was
or else you will wait, obviously.
It was incredible. I started ordering, apparently, before she was prepared for me, and she told me to stop. It was really great. What did she cut me off about something. I can't remember what, though. Remember, everyone laughed.
Yeah.
She wasn't having any of it from anybody. There was a table with a family right next to us, and she was berating them from the minute they got in. The little kids and
the
everything.
Kids, yeah, the kids, the adults.
It was
everybody was fair game.
But that was great. That meal was amazing. Most of this trip has been about how good the food is. So we went, except the first night when we had McDonald's. But
that's true.
That's about what you'd expect, though, with champion PA.
Yeah. Sorry, champion.
Yeah, so like that part of the trip was great. We had a lot of fun with Ryan. We got to really see the city, got a ton of B-roll shot. Hopped back in the Uber in another Uber and drove. That time took 13 minutes to get from Times Square back to our apartment. Wow. I guess the southbound or the traffic back is like nothing. So we were in and out of the city in 4 hours, maybe. Like got to see a ton, got a ton of B-roll shot. Got an interview in, but that day we had also driven like 5.5 hours, so it was a very long day. Like, we started early in the morning and we wrapped pretty late at night. And then the next day we woke up, shot more B-roll, drove down to the riverfront, shot the skyline across the river, and then we all hopped in back in the car, and we drove toward Hudson Valley. We got to Goshen, New York, where we were meeting an author named Linda Zimmerman and an experiencer named Gary. And Gary's an abductee. And we got there a little early. We had like 45 minutes before their interview, but it was at the Goshen Public Library, which is super nice building. And the most, I'm leaving out the most important part of that day, which was Elsie's, where we had breakfast, which might have been the best breakfast I've ever eaten in my life. It was, we wanted like a greasy spoon, and we found this restaurant on a corner, like a corner, one of those corner buildings that's like on a fork in the road where it's like built like in a triangle shape. And we walk in and there were maybe like 10 tables in there.
Yeah, if that.
Yeah, and the woman was like, you'll have to wait a little or whatever. We sat down, they got us all around this tiny table, and it was incredible. Right? I'm not alone in this.
No, and don't forget about the midget, the little person bathroom down in the basement.
Yeah, they let
it's
us.
Like an 1820s building or something.
You had to squeeze past the oven.
Through you went through the kitchen
and a wall
and go down
in a space.
Cellar.
Yeah, and you go down into the cellar, and if you even attempt to stand up, you're gonna crack
the
your head
ceiling. Was like what 5 feet?
It was
maybe
5 feet, but I think it might have been.
I mean, you had to like
you had to stoop down and you walk
all
through
the toilet.
There's no door on where the toilet is. There's a swinging sort of like maybe like 3 feet.
Yeah,
tall.
It's so small.
So you got to squeeze behind there, and then you're in this. You're like hunched down.
Yeah,
obviously,
you're like in a space castle
for the grave.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, it was great.
I think an airplane yeah. bathroom's bigger.
An airplane bathroom is definitely bigger.
Definitely. So like that place was amazing. The home fries were great. I had a breakfast like a bagel sandwich or something. So we're in the Hudson Valley now. We went to Goshen. We interviewed Linda Zimmerman and Gary at the library. And those interviews were great. Linda was fantastic, and I've been aware of Linda's work for a little while because I've always been into the Hudson Valley stuff, which is why we made that trek. But like, I've always been into that stuff because of the Unsolved Mysteries episode that's about the Hudson Valley flap. And she was fantastic. Gary was really interesting, and so we got those two interviews, and then we did B-roll. We drove up to Harriman State Park, and we found a really incredible overlook. You could see all the way to Manhattan, which was, 4 hours away?
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
So that was awesome. And we did all that B-roll, and then we went and found our hotel in Middletown, which was more modern. It wasn't... Where we were in Goshen was cool because it was, like, classic sort of Hudson Valley... Even like a New England look to it. Everything was old and like cobblestone and all that kind
of
stuff.
Then all of a sudden there's a mall and a Target across
the
street.
Yeah, we went to a mall that still had an awesome arcade though in Middletown. And then we crashed that night, and the next day, which was yesterday, which is hard to believe, we woke up in the morning and traveled 4 hours up here, right? Five hours.
Nearly
up,
exactly.
Up to where we are now, which is
not without car trouble.
Coastal.
Obviously.
Oh yeah, and on the drive here, we lost our car.
Super nice,
our
Ford
amazing
Expedition.
Ford Expedition Max. Something just bombed on the. I don't know if it was a transmission.
We lost our turbo.
It was the turbo. Yeah,
which we loved.
Yeah,
dearly.
We were gunning it around people the whole time. Just was having a blast. Now we're in a crappy Suburban.
We're never going to get sponsored by Chevy.
No, sorry, Chevy. So anyway, we're
a Ford team through and through.
We had to switch over, but thankful. I mean, that honestly didn't take any time out of the trip.
That was quick.
We made it still in the time that we had been told we'd be making it originally, except for like 13 minutes.
No, it was astonishing because the turbo went out. We knew we had a problem. It threw an error light, and within a mile and a half, we Googled it, and there was an Enterprise, which is insane because we've been in so many remote locations.
Yeah. So we got that switched out and made it up here to New Hampshire. I keep saying Maine. Made it up here to New Hampshire and met up with Alexander. And we immediately went to the what's that place called?
KRI. The Kit Research Initiative for Consciousness Studies.
Speak up.
You want to tell everybody what that is?
Yeah, so it's kind of like a center where a couple of buddies of mine, they do all kinds of film screenings. People can come and do talks on whatever, basically any topic they want. Lots of paranormal stuff, so they do a lot of stuff with ghosts, a lot of UFO stuff, and that's kind of what we focused on with the interview. Mm-hmm. We talked to this guy, Mike Stevens, a buddy of mine, who is an experiencer and runs sort of a support group for people who claim to have had experiences.
Which is interesting, because wasn't there an episode of The X-Files with basically that subplot about abductees?
Yeah, I feel like it was the one where they were in Pennsylvania with that lady who, her name was like Nancy Hagopian or something like that. It was like season 4, I think.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I mean, I know with The X-Files, obviously, they did a lot of research into things that people claim is happening. But yeah, so they have a support group here in the Seacoast area of New Hampshire and kind of into Maine. We're really close to the border. And there's a lot of sightings of UFOs in this area, and there traditionally have been. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously why we're here, is primarily because of the Exeter incident, which I'm sure people are familiar with. But for those who aren't, it was an incident in 1965 where people were being chased by this glowing red UFO-type object. So it was pretty interesting overall to hear a little bit about that from Mike's perspective. I am not too familiar with that case, even though I live like an hour away from it. I just, as you guys know, I've never really been that into the UFO thing, kind of been reluctantly dragged into it, which we'll talk a little bit more about
Welcome
in the coming days.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, right. So it's, yeah, it's interesting to learn about this area because we are so close to a former Air Force base as well. And I think that's what a lot of locals believe has to do with why there may be activity in this area. I mean, I don't know. It's a very thriving area at this point, too. So there's been a lot of people in this region for hundreds of years.
We did the interview there with Mike, and then we hit the coast because we needed sort of B-roll of that classic New England beach. Right now, outside of... So we're in a hotel, which actually is a really nice hotel, honestly. Yeah. Like, it's better than the Super 8 we stayed at the other night.
It is nice.
Right outside of our window, it looks like we're in The Fog, like the movie The Fog. It's 8... What time is it right now?
Like
8:30 in the morning, and the fog has rolled in, and it's crazy how creepy it looks outside the window. We're about 3 miles from the ocean where we are. And last night we went to an incredible restaurant called The Old Salt. Mm-hmm. So if you're in the area, we highly recommend The Old Salt.
A lot of interesting things happened there.
Yeah, there were some shady characters perusing our car and other cars in the parking lot. And I was going to throw down.
Yeah, there was a near escalation. It was pretty intense.
Yeah. Well, we're in New England. We gotta be a little more aggressive now.
Gotta get on these chowder heads, you know.
Yeah.
So we can fit in.
But yeah, it's been a crazy trip. Like we still have to go up to Franconia, New Hampshire. We're gonna be in the White Mountains, but we have an interview this morning still here in where we are now, Hampton.
Yeah, Exeter. Talk to a guy named Dean Merchant, who's kind of a local historian. He knows a lot about the Exeter incident and also the one of the Air Force planes that took off from the Roswell area from this area.
Yeah.
So that's a cool little tie-in. And then hopefully they'll be able to take us to a spot where they used to store nuclear stuff around here. I don't know the specifics, but it's kind of a close-by spot.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, I think a lot of people believe that maybe this heightened military activity in this area has something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to get one more episode of Monsteropolis recorded before we head back. I'm going to try to post this today, which is Monday the 14th, because we already missed one episode, so I want to get an episode in and then another one in when I get back, so you guys can kind of like experience what we're doing. But I should mention we're up here when the leaves are changing, and it looks like a freaking painting like everywhere you go. But I'm really excited about how everything's going. I think it's been something on this scale we've never attempted anything on this scale before, where you're traveling by the time we get back, I think it'll be over 2,000 miles.
What are we at right now, miles wise?
It's got to be closing in on 1,000 if we're not there yet. Just because of, like, I know when we left, it was at 6-something when we left yesterday, and we probably traveled, what, like 300?
Yeah.
Like to that. Get up here, 300 miles-ish. But there's all the side trips and everything. So I think we're closing in on 1,000, right at 1,000 now.
It's going by very fast.
Yeah. We still have to travel 2 hours today to get to the White Mountains. We're going to go see the Betty and Barney Hill location.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's today or tomorrow.
I guess it depends which day we want to go. But there's a state historical marker. Mm-hmm. There's also like a gas station that was tied to the story. And then the actual sighting or the location where they claim to have the abduction, as well as Franconia Notch State Park, which is this sort of epic little mountain road goes right through it. And that's where they saw this thing coming from above. So it'd be cool to check that out. That's also where the old man on the mountain used to be, which is on the New Hampshire license plates until he fell down like over a decade ago. Just basically a rock that looks like a face. And also, we're going to check out an area called the Lost River Gorge, where an entire section of the mountain burned down last year, or 2 years ago. People claim that it was a meteor or some object that crashed, and it's kind of been off limits to the public for a while, so maybe a well-placed drone in that area might do good. And then we'll obviously also have an interview either today or tomorrow with Carolyn LaRock, who's a biologist and a ufologist, and she's going to lead us on sort of a night ops and talk about some of her experiences.
What's been your favorite
sort of story from all this so far?
I mean, I'm always partial to the experiencer stories. Even if they have a lot of moving pieces and you're not quite sure what to make of it, that's always my favorite thing. I mean, authors and researchers are amazing too, but meeting Sprague was amazing because I've been talking to him for so long. But anytime there's an experiencer, that's always something.
Yeah, I think the thing we're trying to do with this from a creative standpoint is, I mean, just to be completely honest, like, we don't have the connection. I don't have the connections that a lot of the people that are intricately tied into the UFO community might. And we don't have the money that a major budgeted TV show does to just throw at people to get interviews. So my tactic in coming at this was to not go after, like, big names, but to, and that's one of the reasons I contacted you, was to help me, like, get people from this area that are actually tied into the subject who have an active stake in it, whether they're a name or not. And that's not to say we haven't, I think we've landed some interviews from people who would be considered, like, UFO celebs. I mean,
yeah,
we have Rojas and, you know, like, some of these people that do the UFO circuit. But we were much more interested in, like, getting people involved who are actively looking into this, and then people who are actually experiencing things. And again, like, it all goes back to the idea that On the Trail Of is supposed to be a return to the old days of STM, when it was more focused on the subject and a little bit more investigative, kind of like Beast of Boy Hall and Minerva were, and even Boggy Creek. And, I don't know where I was going with that train of thought. Oh, yeah, it's just, I think the interviews have been really interesting and super informative. And I'm excited, I guess, like, as the way this stuff works, especially with On the Trail Of, is there's no pre-planning in terms of, like, what we're going to, how the story's going to end up in the edit. I have an episode outline, and that might get thrown out as soon as I sit down and start editing. So you have to have something to guide you through the interviews. But, like, once you get through the interviews, or into the interviews, they're going to completely, like, take on a life of their own. And this time around, it's really been apparent that is the case. Like, the Brown Mountain Lights was not a part of anything. We didn't talk about the Brown Mountain Lights till, like, the week before, right? And then I contacted you, and I was like, hey, as long as you're coming up with, instead of, what was our original intent for coming north from Orlando?
I don't even remember.
I don't know that we had
so many different kind of iterations and ideas of, well, we could go west a little bit, or we could, it went through
We talked about Pascagoula, I know, at one point.
Yeah.
But I think the Brown Mountain Lights interested me because, for one thing, the only UFO-related incident I've ever had was of what I think was, like, a spook light, or, like, a really big orb in the woods. And I've talked about it before. My dad and I were in Zora, Ohio, back at the Arboretum, where we filmed the posse sequence.
It's a very creepy area.
Yeah, we were back in there, and you know how there's that big lake on the right? We were looking across that lake, and on the other side of the valley, this massive, I mean, it had to have been huge, because we were looking probably a quarter mile away, this massive orange ball came up above the trees. It, like, really slowly, like, came up above the trees, sat there for a minute, and then really slowly went back down. You know, and my first thought was, like, maybe that's the moon or something. Like, kind of like what we experienced last night. But it wasn't on the beach, you know, when we all saw the moon. But it wasn't that at all. It was a strange orange ball came up out of the woods and then went back down. So when I hit on the idea to do the Brown Mountain Lights, I thought that'd be super cool. Because it gives us an entire episode to focus on a side of UAPs that you're not really seeing explored in other places. And it's still part of the phenomenon. Like, how many times do people say they see a UFO and what they really mean is, like, a spook light?
Yeah, so, even with Bigfooting, I know so many people that are out there looking for Bigfoot and they're having orb sightings in the woods. Yeah. I mean, is that kind of connected to that? So I'm part of that too.
And the orb thing, we were interviewing Mike last night, and that was what I asked him, like, what the craft descriptions are like, and he said the most common are orbs in the woods. So, like, So yeah, that Brown Mountain Lights, and we interviewed. So we got Micah Hanks, and he met us up on at the Overlook. It's super late. What time was it when we drove up there?
Nearly
8 o'clock when we started.
I think it was later than that because okay. We didn't leave till 11.
No, we got back at like 11:30. Because I was really irritated when I was going to bed that late.
Yeah. OMB.
We got up there pretty late at night. It was pitch black. It was cloudy and cool.
Nobody up there.
And Shannon and I were there alone for like 10 minutes. I was just shooting, you know, random footage. I mean, you can't see anything. I had that A7S and she had a Bushnell Equinox night vision thing. She could see the, you know, monocle. She could see the hill across the valley. But, like, we were looking at the wrong ridge for a while because there's, like, four mountains
like,
over there.
Let's go check the sign. Yeah. And sure enough, we're like, oh, it's off to the right over there. Okay.
Yeah, so we were up there, and that was a highlight of the trip, even though we didn't see anything. It was just being there because I've always heard about the Brown Mountain Lights. And what's really weird is, like, I grew up going to church camp at Lake James, which is right there, Marion. In fact, the Overlook we were at had a Marion zip code. It was considered Marion. So Marion, North Carolina, I kind of grew up going there every year, a couple times a year. In fact, Paul Shirley, who used to do the Ancillary Characters podcast with me, that's where I met him, was down there. So, like, we didn't see anything or encounter anything, but we had a really cool conversation with Micah, who's super rational, and I hate terming people skeptic, but he's definitely like more on the skeptical side of things. And the reason, by the way, I hate terming, I just don't like calling someone a skeptic.
Yeah.
I think if they're like me, they probably don't like that label. Like, I think we just err on the side of skepticism. Yeah. That was a fun interview. The other interview we got to mention is the one in Orlando with Mark Muncy. And that was super cool too. And it's like one of the things about the series that's going to be so different from anything we've done, even on the trail of Bigfoot, is seeing, not just hearing like interviews from people in these specific locations, but seeing the terrain change and everything from like the first shoot out in the middle of the desert to where we are now, which is on the farthest, almost the farthest reaches of the East Coast of the United States. Like that's going to be such a dramatic change. Like,
well, and we've covered stories and talked to people that have not been on any other show at all. So this is not, you know, if you're watching an Ancient Aliens per
yeah,
se,
this
and
isn't
it's
that.
The same kind of talking heads mm-hmm. as they call them.
Yeah.
It's completely different than any other show.
Yeah. And I'm not sure yet where this is going to end up in terms of number of interviews, but we've already done, closing in on 20. As of today, so it's closing in on 20. We still have the Alexander and Adam to interview. We still have the lady tonight.
Guy today.
That's oh, yeah.
four.
Yeah,
I mean, it's going to end up closer to 25-30, somewhere in that range once you get interviews, and that's across probably 9 or 10 episodes. Is what I'm hoping for. But I'm just really excited to see. And I'm never really like this because I'm always kind of terrified of editing. But on this one, I'm really excited to see how the story sort of takes shape once I get into the edit on it.
So you said your favorite location was Brown Mountain so far, just on this trip?
I think just in terms of, like, traveling to a spot and being incredibly aware of the history, mm-hmm. it was Brown Mountain. Like, that was, like, the A-Bear Road moment for me. But we still have Betty and Barney Hill. The Betty and Barney Hill location is probably going to hit me pretty hard because I've always been really interested in that story and I've listened to their hypnotism tapes, and Mark and I have discussed that on Monsteropolis and all that kind of stuff. So you go to some of those, a location like that, and it's going to have a huge impact. I don't know. I mean, where we were last night on the beach was probably the most scenic. Like, that was incredibly
epic,
gorgeous.
Yeah.
What about you, Adam, so far on this shoot?
I mean, the beach last night has been my favorite spot, at least. But I really did, I've said it several times, enjoyed hearing Ryan Sprague. I think he's super well-spoken, very articulate, very smart guy, obviously. He had his own experience, and he's dug into it about as deep as anybody else, I think, that has. And I just found him super interesting, easy to listen to, and yeah.
That Chestnut Ridge location was awesome, and I've never had this before, but I wish that's where we had been when we made a vision on Chestnut Ridge, because you just had a better sense of the history of the area. One of the unfortunate things about where we stayed in a vision on Chestnut Ridge is it wasn't actually on Chestnut Ridge; it was across the ridge. We stayed in Champion, so it was close, but it wasn't on the ridge. It was on another ridge across. So we were literally on the ridge. Like, when I say we were on the ridge, we had to drive up the ridge to get to the farmhouse we were staying on.
Well, you thought you saw something there for a few minutes.
Where?
The light. That you said, you know, you were holding your finger up, and you're like, I think that it's moving a bit.
Oh, we established that was a star, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a star. So far, we haven't yet.
We
haven't seen
anything.
I gave away the Brown Mountain Lights thing. We've seen the Brown Mountain Lights, hundreds of them.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Can't wait.
I think something, though, that's interesting on this, at least for me, is like the whole UFO thing has been something that, not that I haven't been into it. Alexander and I were talking last night, like, by association, you hear about it running in these circles. You know, you have your people who are very much into the UFO subject, but like me, it's been Bigfoot and started with like the whole paranormal stuff. Like, that's how I got into all of this type of thing. I think a lot of us are like that. Shannon's probably had more exposure to it with the podcast or whatever, but I mean, even still then, like, I feel like we all in general are more cryptid people or whatever. So there's been a lot of things that I've heard on this trip that I was like, oh, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, I didn't even know, you know, that's been interesting.
Well, I think one thing that was eye-opening for me from the interviews we've done are the similarities between Gary's abduction experiences and Barry Clark's, who we interviewed in Invasion on Chestnut Ridge. It wasn't necessarily, it was little details from the two. At one point, he started talking about his kids having bloody noses, because he was talking about how he kept waking up with these bloody noses, and he had triplets, and they were waking up with the same thing. And it was really interesting to me, because it really reminded me of Barry Clark and his grandson, and I was like, this dude says the kids recounted seeing men come through a hole in the ceiling. I'm bailing on this interview.
Too freaked out to continue.
Out, yeah.
I'm done with this shoot.
I mean, I would have to echo, especially what Adam said. I know we talked about it, but it's something about this subject in particular that's so almost like international. Mm-hmm. There's this kind of stuff is reported all over the world. It's not like Bigfoot or, you know, my personal favorite Champ or something like that, where it's very regional or in certain areas. You know, I have family in Europe, and ever since my experience in Pennsylvania this past year, I've been much more open to talk about this subject with people, and I'll kind of casually start it up. And even over there, I mean, in Croatia, you know, one of my friends, I just kind of casually started talking about it. She's like, oh yeah, I had an experience. It flew like right over our heads. Mm-hmm. It was like a disc shape. And that just kind of reinforces how it's so, like I said, international. Because you can, especially with this series, you know, like you said, the wide amount of terrain you guys have just covered, from the deserts to the mountains on the East Coast, all up and down the East Coast. I mean, it's really interesting how it's so pervasive. And I think culturally, especially, with all the festivals and all the things that go on, how it's so like present in our kind of minds. So I think that's going to be really cool about this series, is that aspect of it. That's what I'm probably most excited about.
I want to ask you this, and then we probably need to wrap up, but what does it feel like to have been the guy that kickstarted on the trail of, and now be like on 3 years, because it's been 3 years.
It has,
or at least this is the, yeah, it's been 3 years since you started filming.
Yep, yeah. So
because you were filming in 2017,
I think, the summer. I think that's when we did filming.
It was 20.
No, yeah, it's cool. I mean, just think about how it started, how it was kind of just like an idea we had.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, William Duran Guinness just kind of was like, hey, you want to photograph my Champ expedition? And everything kind of got rolling, and seeing then on the trail of Bigfoot, it just feels nice. And it's cool that, you know, another Small Town Monsters production is coming up to New England now.
Yeah.
Because there's so much weird stuff up here. And
oh, yeah.
I've been lobbying hard to get stuff up here for a while.
Well, yeah, the East Coast, like, we want to hit. So at some point, I think what's next for SDM is Desert Dwellers, because we really want to go out to the desert for, like, 2 weeks and shoot 3 movies back to back to back. That's my big plan for the next trilogy. But after that, I want to get I want to get up to the East Coast because I want to do Jersey Devil. I'd like to do a movie that focuses in on a handful of smaller stories, like an anthology, almost like Invasion on Chestnut Ridge.
Dover Demon?
But yeah, Dover Demon, like that kind of stuff, but up in this area. Maybe some supernatural stories in addition to the, and maybe Exeter will get its own part in that or something like that. But I definitely want to come up here. There's a lot to explore. We're going to do another episode of this type of thing, probably either later today or tomorrow, and get some more tidbits from the filming of On the Trail of UFOs. I guess that's it. Everyone say bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Leave us a rating and review on iTunes, and Mark will be back at some point when I get back to Ohio.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.